Hey, everybody. This is David Hayward, the Lasting Supper Meet a Member podcast. Today, I'm talking with Robin Kirk. She's been a member for a long time, almost since the beginning. We did a part one with Robin Kirk 2 years ago, and she expressed her incredible fear of hell, and I just thought it would be cool to catch up with her and see where she is now, maybe share a little bit about her deconstruction and how things have gone, how things have progressed, and how she's gotten over her fear of those things she was afraid of. So here she is, Robin Kirk. Robin Kirk, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. This is part two. We did an interview like just over 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And 2 years later, here we are. I've been thinking about you because, well, I see your updates on Facebook and everything, but I remember our first interview and, you know, the stuff you were going through and everything. And I thought it would be cool to revisit some members and just see, you know, what differences have come about, what changes have happened and so on. So I thought it'd be cool to talk with you. So I'm glad you agreed to do it.
Yeah, no, I'm excited.
Anyway, what's new with you?
Well,
I mean, beside you know, the hell issue and all that.
Yeah.
Like, just you're studying to be a lawyer now? And
yeah, I moved in April back to Oklahoma, which is where my family is.
Okay.
And I'm in law school. I broke up with my longtime boyfriend, so I'm single, which is different.
Thanks for letting us know.
Yeah.
Just putting it out there. I'm single.
Yeah. I'm single. So it's different. It's been good. It's just kind of been a whirlwind because I did everything really fast and, but it's good.
So you've moved back where your family is, your mom and dad?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Are you with them?
No.
Oh, okay.
I moved back. And I spent the summer living with my sister in the city. My parents live in a suburb outside of the city.
Okay.
But I wasn't going to live with them. But now I live on my own.
Right.
In the college town where I'm at. So.
Okay. Which college town are you in?
Norman, Oklahoma.
Norman. Okay.
I go to OU. So.
Okay.
Usually if people hear of OU, it's for football. But.
Yeah. Football or law.
Yeah, football, law, or probably like a racist fraternity, which isn't great, but
oh geez. What kind of law are you studying or hoping to go into?
Well, right now everyone kind of takes the same classes,
right?
I would like to go in to like government work or nonprofit work, something like that, but I don't know. I try to like keep an open mind because
yeah,
a lot of times people go into law school wanting to do one thing and then they're like, oh, I actually want to be a tax lawyer or something like that. I didn't even think about.
How many years of study do you have ahead of you?
Three.
So, okay. Yep. And then you write the bar.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So how long do you have before you kind of have to study which stream you want to go into?
Probably really by like next, like your second year summer, you get an internship in the summer.
I see.
Usually that's supposed to be like where you're going to work or that's the hope. Mm-hmm. So you try to like have an idea by probably the middle of your second year.
Cool. Okay. So how are you? Like, you've launched some pretty major changes in your life. You've moved, you broke up with your boyfriend. I remember you going through that. That was pretty difficult.
Yeah. It sucked. I wouldn't say like it's still not great, but moving helped because I don't have to see him or anything like that. So,
yeah.
But yeah, other than that, I'm good as far as like, religious stuff. I went to church like a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It was a small Episcopalian church.
I remember you telling us that you were going.
Yeah.
I
love liturgy. I think it's very calming, but it's hard with like being in Oklahoma. And I got the vibe that it was a more progressive church, but it's just hard kind of to tell.
Yeah.
Like quite how progressive. And not everyone wants to like say they are progressive because they don't want to like turn people off, I think, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess as far as like hell stuff. It hasn't really flared up in a long time.
Yeah, so just to remind some of our members, or maybe for new members who haven't heard the first podcast, man, you were like pretty much sometimes frozen in terror over the possibility of going to hell. And you were deconstructing theologically, but still this irrational fear would just overpower you and totally paralyze you.
Yeah, like it was awful. And I sometimes think about like how terrible that was. And it's shocking. I think I've gone back and like read blog posts that I've written or just things like that. And just being in that state of mind is not a fun place to be.
No.
And it's also hard to explain, to people, because like, if I am close to someone, I'll usually like let them know, either that I occasionally like have OCD and if it comes up, like, I'm sorry if I'm a crazy person, but just like a warning, especially like in law school, it's really stressful. And that is usually what causes that kind of thing to happen. So usually if I know someone really well, I'll kind of be like, hey, by the way, if I start acting weird, this would be why. But
it's
a hard thing. The hardest part of that is if I'm like, hey, I'm OCD, but it's not like a cleaning thing or something. They're like, oh, well, then how are you OCD? And then it's like, well, I get stuck on things. And they're like what? And I'm like, well, I went through a period of time when I was like deathly afraid of hell. And that's hard for people to understand.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Although there are members on the Lasting Supper who share that same terror and who also struggle with OCD and
well, like in the Lasting Supper, it's not a big deal. Like, right. I mean, it's a big deal, but it's not uncommon. And so that's great. And that's one of the reasons like I love the Lasting Supper, because people are going through similar things. But
so is it with the OCD that you obsess about hell, and it just, is that what it is?
It's not always hell. I mean, I think my OCD just latches on to something. Mm-hmm. I'll notice it every once in a while, like if I'm really stressed out, or when I was like applying to law schools, I could tell, like, I would like freak out. Like, what if, 'cause when you apply to law schools, they make you sign something at the end that's like, is everything true? If it's not true, you might not be able to take the bar. Yeah. And so I had like a few freak outs. Like, what if I accidentally didn't put something? What if I like, what if I go through law school and then they're like, you can't take the bar. So I notice it with things like that. But it's a lot calmer than, and I think I'm like cognizant of it. So,
How do you calm yourself? Do you take meds, or do you have methods, or if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, no, it's fine. Sometimes I just recognize it and write it out, which maybe isn't the greatest, but I'm like, you know, I know this is what's happening, and it just is what it is. And my sister has anxiety issues too, so I can usually like talk to her about it, but I am prescribed meds. I got re-prescribed in the summer because I was kind of stressed out with law school. And since I had just broken up with my boyfriend, I was afraid. I was trying to be like ahead of the game.
Right.
Because I didn't want to like get depressed or anything like that. But I don't really take them because I'm the worst pill taker, but also I've been feeling okay. So
I like the way you say it. I don't really take them. Either you do or you don't. But
yeah. Well, I don't. But I have them just in case. But it's just, I don't know. I'm not anti-pill or anything like that. It definitely served a purpose for me when I was like having a really hard time, because I wouldn't have been able to function. Sometimes they make me feel like kind of just even keel, like not anything, if that makes sense. And so I don't know.
Is that an unpleasant feeling for you?
feeling like just kind of blah is, I guess.
Yeah, because you come across as a person with a lot of energy.
I don't know if I have a lot of energy. I think I just would rather like fully feel my emotions, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get you.
But I'm not anti pills. Like right. I know some people are, and that's fine. But I definitely think that if they help you, then you should take them.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you then. So 2 years ago, you were, I think you would even cry, you know, because you were so upset about the possibility of going to hell and everything. So what are some things that you think have contributed to your, to that fear sort of dissipating? How has that happened? What are some things that have helped you?
I would say first time.
Yeah.
Like, that sucks, but it took a long time. Like, I wanted it to go away very fast.
Yeah.
And that wasn't going to happen. Like, it took at least a year.
Yeah.
Probably, like, a little more than that, really.
Yeah.
And within that year, for a long time, I was going to a counselor, like, once a week. And then I cut it down to, like, every other week. And then I eventually stopped. But, like, the biggest thing is that I was talking about it all of the time.
Yeah.
To my significant other at the time.
Right.
Because I needed someone to be like, no, you're going to be okay. Like, but most people don't think about that all day. So they're like, of course you're going to be fine. Like, you know, but mostly time, but also like getting help.
Yeah.
If you're in that state, because I couldn't have done it, like, and if I had not gone and saw someone.
Yeah.
Because I just needed someone to, like, listen to me and not be, like, freaked out or...
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, I had a hard time, but, like, because my parents just really did not understand what was going on. And I don't, like, they've backed off and they don't pressure me as much, which is... I actually think it's because I moved home that they don't, and they probably don't want me to leave. But, like, it used to be, like, anytime I would visit, we had to talk about God. And when I was going through that, like, I had been, like, they knew, sort of. And I had been, like, you know, I told my dad, I can't talk about God with you. Like, mm-hmm. I can't.
Right.
It makes me very anxious. Like I, you know, and he still would like ask me to go to church or,
mm-hmm.
And at one point I had been like, I came home for Christmas. I cannot go to church with you. I can't like my counselor says, so I have to set boundaries. I can't go to church with you. And then like, he still asked like a day later.
Yeah.
And it was like, I literally just told you I can't go. Like, I got in a fight with my mom when I went to church at one point and then, like, had a panic attack afterward. And she just was like, I don't get it. I don't get it. And she's like, why don't you, like, talk to us about it? And, like, it's not – you don't have to get it. And I don't have to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't talk to them about it because I knew that to them it would – they would think that that is, like, God calling me back.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that means to them.
Mm-hmm.
They thought that me having all these like feelings of guilt and stuff like that was like God putting something on my heart.
Yeah. Conviction.
Yes. Yeah. And so I couldn't talk to them about it partially because of that, but then also because like they've personally said this to me. They feel like failures as parents because me and my siblings aren't like super religious, I
mm-hmm.
guess.
Mm-hmm.
We don't go to a Church of Christ. My sister goes to a Methodist church occasionally, but mm-hmm. That doesn't count. So,
yeah, no, I know. I'm the oldest of five children and none of us go to church. And, my parents are very faithful and always have been. And, they, you know, my father especially feels very, very disappointed, and especially when two of his sons were pastors and they both not only left the ministry but the church. So
yeah,
it's like a huge downfall and, you know, statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. Boundaries.
Yeah.
My point was boundaries. Boundaries are very hard to set sometimes, but they're important. And not, and it wasn't just people, it was with myself. Like, I had to tell myself to stop talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
My counselor was like, you can only talk about this, like, when you're with me, really. And like once a week with your boyfriend, and like, you can't talk about it anymore. Like, because that was like just keeping it in my mind all the time.
Yeah.
And I still did. I'm sure I still talked about it, but less. Once I like told myself, like, you're only allowed to talk about this, like with mm-hmm. Charlie, my ex, like once a week, then like things started to calm down, because I wasn't like allowing myself to ruminate on it out loud all the time.
Yeah.
That's
true, eh? Like, just very practical advice.
Yeah. But then just, I don't know, like, I'm not going to act. The hell thing hasn't really bothered me in a while, but there's still like times I like will recognize if I read something or watch something that I'll probably get really anxious and I probably shouldn't watch it. Like, someone posted the like, give me sex, Jesus.
Oh yeah.
And I actually like watched a preview for that a long time ago and was really interested and wanted to watch it, but I watched like 5 seconds of it and I was like, nope. I was like, can't do that, because just the like very like preachy language about like God only wants you to have sex in marriage kind of thing. I feel like I try to be like a sex positive person, and I don't like the like shaming effect of all of that.
Oh yeah, yeah, for
it's
sure.
Just so awful, and I can't. Ugh.
Yeah. So this whole thing about hell, yeah, and here you've been advised not to talk about it too much, but here we are devoting.
Oh, it's fine now.
I know this. Anyway, forgive us. Anyway, you can tell your therapist, you know, that yeah. It was served a good cause.
Yeah.
But so time, yeah, I agree. Time, meds if necessary, and if you want, also a good therapist.
Yes.
And maybe a good friend or two that you can talk about it only when you need to. But yeah, I'd say those are all, you know, I always tell people, man, like, give yourself time. In time, like a year from now, 2 years from now, you'll look back on this time and it'll be over. And get a good therapist, like talk to somebody, a professional. Like, I always insist that a good therapist is a miracle worker. They can do wonders in our lives. So, as it has in mine.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, is that it's like, at least down here, it's not like, and it's not like necessarily looked down upon, but up north, like, everyone has a therapist they see all the time. And like
mm-hmm.
here, it's like, you see a therapist, you must have like have a problem, or like,
yeah,
you know, like it's a thing, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah. Like, I really couldn't have done it. I couldn't have done it on my own.
Yeah.
And like, luckily I don't really think that my parents, I wasn't like raised in a household where it was like bad to see one. I just never saw one. I probably should have seen one like in high school, but
mm-hmm.
I didn't. But,
mm-hmm.
so it wasn't when I realized that, cause it took me when I like first got in that state, it took me like a couple weeks before I was like, something's not right. Like,
yeah,
this isn't just me feeling bad about something. Like, something's not right.
Yeah.
It took me about a month or a couple weeks. And as soon as I realized that, I went to a doctor, I got a therapist, and like was on my way. But if I had been from like a household where that wasn't an okay thing, like
mm-hmm.
I would have been stuck for a lot longer, I think, longer yeah. than a year. Or I just would have like spent that year not talking to anyone, or like just in my room crying, or
mm-hmm.
you know, and it would just would have been a lot worse. But it was not a cakewalk.
No. And so this whole thing where we're afraid we've made a bad mistake, or you know, we're on the road to hell, or you know, we're in God's disfavor, or you know, all these kinds of things, like we live under that cloud. And then when we start deconstructing, that's when we realize that it's these beliefs are actually a problem, that they're making us sick, or we're living in fear or guilt or shame or all these things. And then that's, like you say, that's when the actual work starts. That's when you actually have to start working to heal yourself of this disease that we call fear or guilt or shame, you know? So
yeah. Well, and I realized, like, through therapy that, like, my whole relationship with God was, like, fear and shame based.
Yeah.
And that was, like, I think, okay in my parents' book.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Most people's book, I think.
Yeah. But I was just like, this is not an okay, like, I wouldn't want to be in a relationship with a person this way.
No.
Like, and that no one would think that was fine.
No.
You know, and I, God, he, she, whatever, I, you know, whatever we call God, I don't think that he wants that to be your motivator.
Right.
So I just, I don't know. I, like, realized that point. And mm-hmm. then I think I was probably, like, kind of pissed off, or still am, just that, like, that's acceptable and I'm a failure because I don't subscribe to that, or,
yeah,
you know, but.
Well, you know, I want to ask you two questions, or ask you a question and then and make a statement. But the first question is, when we talked 2 years ago, how far into your deconstruction would you say you were?
Maybe like, maybe half.
No, I mean in terms of time, like were you maybe a year in?
Oh, no, I was like 4 months in.
Oh, okay. So 4 months in, we talked, you were terrified of hell, and now it's 2 years later and you're pretty much hell free.
Yeah. Sure. For now. Yeah. Like I always
for now,
like,
yeah.
I always like worry that it's gonna come back up or
Oh hey.
And I'm also I always think like I don't know, I'm in a weird place like theologically, I think, because mm-hmm. I guess I always think back to there's an interview with Bishop Spong where he says like mm-hmm. this is my tradition, I walk through my tradition.
Yes.
And so I always think like it's still a part of me and I would still like love to be a part of a congregation that I felt it was okay for me to be like very unsure about everything.
Yeah.
Which is why like Greta, I don't know her last name.
Vosper.
Yeah. I think that's that situation. I think that like the, is it the United Church of Canada?
Yes.
So that would be like the same as the, is that the same as like the United Churches of Christ in the state?
They're kind of, yeah. Kind of similar.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like they kind of missed an opportunity because first of all, like I'm pretty confident that there are a lot of other United pastors probably in her shoes. She's just honest about
oh,
it.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally, absolutely.
And yeah. But then like but also I don't even think does she really call herself an atheist? Or is she just like I just feel like she feels like she's beyond
yeah.
boxing God in that
yeah. well,
manner.
She doesn't reject the label atheist and she says she does not believe in that God. Something like that, she'll say.
Okay.
But she...
But even still, it's just...
Yeah.
I don't know. I get it to an extent because it's like, well, if you're going to be a pastor, like... But... But then at the same time, I feel like she's not telling... I feel like she was still pastoring to her congregation.
And... Oh, yeah, totally. I think she... Like, she, I think... Well, I've written about it a few times, and I think that... in fact, a pastor's theology can get in the way of people's beliefs or their own personal growth because people will obviously try to emulate the beliefs of the pastor, right? So,
yeah. Well, and like, you know, I feel like some pastors get boxed in this way where it's like if I was the person and I came to them and I was like, hey, like, I don't really know what I believe or what I don't believe, but like I want to be a part of your congregation. Like, what do I need to do? they wouldn't feel like they're allowed to say, like, that's fine.
Yep. I wish there were more churches like that as well. Absolutely.
But, you know, and so rare. Very rare. And like I've visited a Unitarian church. For me, that's like a little too broad.
Yeah, I visited Unitarian as well, even spoke at one here a few times. And they're on the opposite end of the spectrum, the one I went to, where the previous churches I was at, was everything was God. And then this one, they avoided anything supernatural altogether. So it was kind of both ends of the spectrum. So it was an interesting, I enjoyed the community, but it was an interesting dynamic going on there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah. I the Unitarian church I had visited was great. Everyone seemed like super nice. And they're very like socially active and I really liked that. But like I had said earlier, I really appreciate liturgy and
yeah,
that kind of thing still like speaks to me. So
yeah,
I just missed like that, the aspect of like coming and
yeah,
communing and like being kind of quiet and putting yourself like in front of something. I don't know, like
yep,
coming before God, if you want to call it God. If you don't want to call it God, that's fine. But like coming before God and like having that moment.
I know atheists who love to go and sit through liturgy just because it has that calming effect and they feel, you know, at one with themselves and in touch with the universe and everything. It can be very beautiful. In fact, I went to a funeral a few weeks ago at a Anglican church and, you know, almost the whole service was pretty much red. So it was pretty formal and there were robes and things. And, you know, I just sort of observed. And then at one point he read the 1 Corinthians 13, you know, the love passage, love is passage.
Yeah.
And I was struck by that reading. It's not necessarily has to be a Christian reading, right? It was very, very meaningful moment for me. And I thought, yeah, I can see how people, even if they don't believe, can be very moved and touched and so on by liturgical experiences. So
yeah,
I enjoyed it too. Hey, I wanted to talk to you though about, you know, you're being pissed off at maybe your parents or authority or the church or whatever for making you feel ashamed or afraid or guilty. But you know, when you become a parent, you start to understand how fear and shame and guilt are very, very effective tools to modify your children's behavior. They really are. I'm not saying, please don't think I'm saying I'm validating them, but I'm saying, like, for example, you know, say pot or whatever, and you find out your kids are smoking weed or maybe they're drinking underage or whatever. And you love to put in front of their faces, you know, articles or memes or whatever that terrify the shit out of them about the effects of smoking weed or drinking underage or premarital sex or, you know, all this kind of stuff, because you're afraid. You're just living in fear and you don't want them to experience pain. You don't want them to experience unhappiness or failure or public shame, you know? So you discover pretty quickly as a parent that fear and shame and guilt can really be effective ways of, you know, making your kids behave. And so I know totally why your parents used it. I totally know why the church uses it, because it works. It works, right? And I mean, look at you.
Yeah, look at you.
Look at me. Like I grew up in a home that wasn't afraid to use shame and guilt and fear to make me behave. And, you know, I know the church is very, very adept at using those tools. So don't you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I was pissed off, but I always, I like to an extent, I was like, I get it. Like, you're scared I'm going to hell, and that's scary. Like,
for sure.
Like, I don't blame you for being upset, because who wants their kid to go to hell? Like, you know, but at the same time, I think it just gets to a point where I was kind of like, I, and then on top of that, for them, like, church is their community, like, everything. All of my family friends growing up were from church. Like, whoever was gonna, like, take me if my parents died were, like, friends from church. Like, so everything is in that kind of, like, community, which to them is comforting. To me is, like, it is good in some ways. And then also at the same time, I feel like it gets to a point where it's like, kind of cuts people out, not necessarily on purpose, but, but yeah, like, it's a great motivator. Like, of course it is. And I'm like, but I don't know.
It doesn't justify it.
No, no. But
hey, are your parents friends with you on Facebook? Do they see what you post?
No. My dad's not on Facebook. My mom is, but she has not friend requested me. And she knows I don't, like, really want to be friends with my parents on Facebook, but which I don't, most things that I post, like, they know I'm really liberal, so it wouldn't really, like, be super shocking. I don't think they know, like, maybe quite, no, I'm sure they hear, because I'm, like, friends with probably some of their friends, but I don't know if they know, like, quite how, like, pro-LGBT I am and stuff. So maybe that would be shocking, but I don't usually, I don't post, like, really any religious articles or anything like that. Partially because, like, I don't know where I stand all the time. And, like, I was, like, with a friend the other day, and I was like, oh, like, I meant to go to church and I didn't go. And she was like, oh, and I was like, yeah. And she's like, I'm not religious. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Like, I don't care. And she was like, okay. And I was just like, she just didn't understand, because I think she just assumed, like,
you were going to try and save her.
Yeah. Or that, like, that I wasn't, like, religious, that I was an atheist or whatever, which is fine to assume. But, like, I still, like, I want to keep that door open. I want to raise my kids in a church personally. There will probably be a lot of, like, you don't have to, like, you, a lot of, like, qualifiers about, like, you don't have to believe this if you don't want to believe it, but.
Well, I hope you find a good church that you're happy with.
Yeah, I almost did the other day, because, like, most Episcopal churches, you have, they have, like, a class you can go to, like, actually become Episcopalian, which I would eventually like to do. But I tend to be, like, kind of a shy person. So putting myself, like, in a class with people I don't know somewhat. And then at the same time, like, I don't know if that's going to be triggering for me. Like, taking an oath of what I believe, or, like, things like that, which I just really love. I love labels, which is... I love and hate them. I love them in the sense that they give me so much comfort, which is my OCD. But I hate them because, like, I don't really fit perfectly. No, and I don't think anyone does, but I think I used to try so hard to fit perfectly. And so it annoys me that I just can't anymore.
And then you feel trapped if you're
signed but then, line. Like, I just think everyone... I live in the Bible Belt, so everyone down here is like, you're either Christian or you're not Christian. You can't, I can't be like, I'm Christian, but, or I'm, you know.
And if you are Christian, you have to live like it.
Or usually if I know someone and they ask, I usually be like, I'm Christian agnostic. Like, they don't really understand what that means, but also don't read a lot of, like, progressive theology. So, you know, it's just, like, kind of this situation where it's like, I would still probably qualify myself as that, in the sense that that's where I want to be. But, you know, things are more complicated than people think they are.
For sure. Absolutely. You know, there's another thing too. I think about sometimes, and you know, your parents go to church and probably a lot of their friends know their children and everything. And it's kind of like with my mom and dad, they still go to church and, all of their kids don't. And, I wonder sometimes if they get from their friends, you know, oh, you know, we're praying for your kids and it's too bad about your kids. And, you know, especially when I'm, you know, pretty out there online and, they must see my cartoons and stuff. I wonder if my mom and dad are somewhat embarrassed by me, you know, and life would be a lot easier for them if I just went to church somewhere or whatever, you know? So.
Oh, for sure. Like if I'm not on a prayer list, like,
yeah,
that's probably out of people being nice and like trying to not upset my parents.
Yeah.
Unless my parents put me on one, which is like also possible. Like, I'm sure, I know that they pray for me and my siblings to like come back to the church all the time, which like, I don't blame them. That's the thing. It's like, it annoys me, but I get it. Like, whatever.
Yeah. So one day you're going through the day and all of a sudden you have a nice warm feeling. You can think, oh, somebody's praying for me right now.
Yeah. That I'll go back to the Church of Christ.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's hard. I think it's hard for parents who are like, I'm sure it's hard for your parents. Like, they're in the church. They want the best for their kid.
Yep.
Which kind of sucks, because I feel like I would love to be like, have a strain free relationship with my mom and dad, but that will always come up. Like, yeah. always. And I like, I'm a future thinker. I'm always like worried about my kids. Like,
yeah.
What's going to happen when they go see like grandma and grandpa? Like,
yeah,
I'm going to be like probably a crazy hippie parent and like not believe in gender norms and things like that. And
in very what? Open.
Huh?
In what?
Gender norms.
Oh, gender norms.
Yeah. But like, I grew up and my mom actually was pretty lax about stuff like that. But
yeah,
you know, like, I'm always worried, like, what if my kid is gay? Or like, what if, you know, like, my household is going to be so vastly different than my parents. And obviously I want them to be in my kid's life, but I feel like I just wish that they, like, I could be open with them and like have a closer relationship, but I can't, because they're committed, and like, that's great. Be committed. It's just, you know, I think that they would like a closer relationship with me too, but it would have to be on their terms. So
exactly. Hey, Robin, was there something that you wanted to say today that you didn't get a chance to just before we go?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to think.
Okay.
I will say, I know that like in the past few months that the Lasting Supper has had some like ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're new, like, stick with it. Like, yeah. And if you're old and you're thinking about like leaving because you're mad, I briefly thought about leaving, but not because I was mad, just because I was like, I don't know if I am getting as much out of this anymore, but not in a bad way, just like in a whatever. But I truly think that everyone in the Lasting Supper is here because we care about each other. And to me, it is like a family. I know some people think that that carries a lot of bad things. To me, it's like a good family.
yeah.
Like, a family that listens to each other and respects each other and tries to see where everyone's coming from. And I think that's what, like, it made me upset when things were going on. 'Cause I was just like, I just wish that people understood, like, I feel like everyone's intent is the same. To be a good community of people who have somewhat differing views that are trying to understand each other. And like, you're going to slip up. I'm sure that I'm confident that I did. And, you know, but then you forgive people and you move on. Yeah. But I just wanted to say, like, if you're new, you should stick with it. If you're old, you should stick with it, or at least not leave on a bad note. 'Cause I think, I've always, the past few years I've been here, I've always seen the Lasting Supper as a good thing, a good community. To me, I think it is somewhat my church and my family, but that's me. And I I'm not going to put that. I like labels, so
yeah,
I'm not going to put that on other people.
Well, thanks. That's cool. No, we did go through a really bad spell and we did lose some people, but we're growing again. And yeah. I like the atmosphere on the Last Thing Supper again. It's back to, you know, mutual respect and seems very peaceful, and we're developing the main site and stuff like that. So no, things are good. Things are picking up again. But like you say, we did go through a really, really rough spell and I'm still reeling personally from it, but I'm getting better as well. And, you know, talking it out with some people and stuff. So I really appreciate that. And I appreciate you talking with us, filling us up. You.
Sorry if I rambled. I always
no. Things. You sound great. You really do. And I'm glad. It sounds like your life's on track and things are going well and you're not living in the same kind of fear that you were living in before. And I think that's really awesome. It just goes to show that we can improve our lives and that we can heal ourselves and that we can get over some things, right?
Yeah. Just time. I think that is the big time. That's totally. If you're feeling that this right now, that fear, like I hate it that it's time, but it's time. Like that's the answer.
For sure. Well, Robin, thanks so much for talking with us. Really appreciate it. Maybe we'll do a part three in a couple more years.
Yeah.
After you pass the bar.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And maybe TLS will be so big that we'll hire you as our lawyer.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I could be the last December lawyer. That's going to be my job.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, have a great day.
You too.
Okay. Bye. See ya. Bye. Well, that was our delightful Robin Kirk. Thanks so much, Robin, for participating again and letting us do a part two. Listen, if you want to be interviewed for a Meet a Member podcast, just let me know. If you want to do a part two, let me know. Love to do it. Love you guys all at the Last Thing Supper. See you at the Last Thing Supper table.